It is true. Our economy is crumbling. Meanwhile, Biden uses economic whipping boys, Putin, COVID, and conservatives to avoid action and any accountability. You're listening to The Last Gay Conservative. I'm your host, Chad Law. Yeah. Hello, everybody. And let's go, Brandon. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the No Woke Zone, a zone where fact always beats fiction and truth always prevails, a place where we destroy the left, the mob, the liberals, and the Democrats at home, online, and in political office. We're always right and never canceled. Welcome to the Last Gay Conservative Podcast. All right. You notice the new music and intro that is all done for the video productions that'll be launching soon. I know I sound like a broken record saying that, but it really is happening. I just underestimated the amount of work and time these things take. Who knew you couldn't just plug in a microphone and talk to be a successful podcaster or broadcaster? Anyways, well, today we're going to expose the truth about this economy, Biden's economy, by diving into what has happened, what's currently happening, and what's going to happen in the near future. I just love that title, Biden's Whipping Boys. Truth be told, my writer wrote that. I did not. But when we were recording this, funny enough, one of the girls in my office said, instead of whipping boys, shouldn't we say a person in whom which whippings happen? I burst out laughing. It never, ever gets old. We had just listened to Nina the Janky Witch refer to her mother as the person in which gave birth to her. Who the hell talks like that? The person in which birthed me? Why even say person? Maybe the uterus attached to the person in which gave me birth. Who knows? It goes too far when you can't say mom and dad. As always, I want to touch base on a few news items that are happening and pertain to previous episodes. One thing I have just been dying to ask is, do y'all have Ukraine flags on your social media? I'm just curious because it seems to be the cool new thing. And I wonder if any of these people have any clue what supporting Ukraine means. I mean, don't get me wrong. I pray for the people of Ukraine every day. But why are people online just such sheep? None of them are posting or wearing them because they really support Ukraine. They're wearing them because it's trendy. I mean, I guess I shouldn't tear down something meant to be positive, but I hate people today so quick to follow. Putting a flag on your IG accomplishes what? In my opinion, these big digital show support movements are just a way of people to do just that, show and not do. Feel good about themselves with the flag, but didn't donate, didn't volunteer, probably didn't even read about it. But if I put this flag by my face, everyone will think I did. This is social media today, folks. All fake and no substance. And when it comes to issues of international relations and warfare, it's very scary to see how many take it lightly. Moving on, Disney's in some real trouble now. For those of you who listened to my last episode around the Don't Say Gay or fake Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, understand how crazy it's been. But Disney, being the woke pieces of crap they are, came out and told all of us it would fight to repeal the bill, insert gay bias into their content, and undermine politicians who signed it. Well, just like I said, they messed with the wrong people. I said this then, and I'm going to say it again. This bill was drafted, voted on, and signed by Democratic representatives for all over the state of Florida, including the governor. It followed the steps exactly how our Constitution outlines on a state and federal level. So when companies like Disney come along and totally undermine that process, sending the message that if you don't like something, you should cry and fight about it versus engaging in the process itself, declaring they as a corporation have more power and influence than the people. They spit on democracy. Well, folks, it's the same democratic process. The Florida State Senate voted 23-16 to strip Disney of its self-governing status. This is going to have massive tax implications and remove their ability to govern at the same level as counties. I'm not going to go into the whole thing. You can go check out the story. My point is that when you use digital platforms and hidden content against the American Foundation in an attempt to undermine democracy, which represents people, you're waving your middle finger at all of us. In other words, stay in your lane or there's a good chance you'll get hit. In this case, it was a massive semi-truck with no brakes down a steep hill named Ron DeSantis, my hero. These companies have got to learn to stop the insanity. Stop allowing their employees to dictate their policies. When has that become a thing? And why don't you teach your employees how to get stuff done through respecting democracy instead of spitting on it? Now, follow the story and mark my words. I think mark my words may have become my version of Bush's read my lips. Nonetheless, I digress. Mark my words. Disney will suffer for meddling in democracy. Another favorite I love, I see online all the time, is go woke, go broke. This ping pong game is not over. Trust me, liberals don't go down that easy, but democracy will prevail over them in Florida one way or another. There will be massive tax hikes and regulations placed on the Disney theme parks in Florida, and they will have no choice to do a nice big round of layoffs. It will also force Disney to increase ticket prices and other park amenities like food and souvenirs, ultimately causing less people to visit, hurting their bottom line. I just hope all the protesters and walkout supporters for the LGBTQ community watch as their colleagues pack up their desks and start looking for other work. I really hope it was worth it. I hope they felt it was worth it. These are today's liberals. All destruction, no construction. Of course, the news story is okay. We'll just leave Florida with leaving all of your residents jobless. That won't happen. It's almost logistically impossible. And any state that they go to, they're going to face the same tax implications, and it won't make a difference either way. Okay. That being said, let's dive into the Biden economy or whatever's left of it. I've received several emails requesting that I break down inflation and some of the other buzzwords we're hearing about the economy and explain the causes. Well, folks, you asked, I'm answering. I can only imagine these questions are starting to pour in because A, people are really starting to feel it. Couple months at $6 a gallon and ordering a meal at McDonald's doubled in price, or B, people are hearing the left try and play it off in every possible way. Well, it could or it couldn't. Economists aren't sure. Occasionally, someone with no agenda just lays it out and they're deemed a fearmonger or Trumper. I just hate seeing it. It's such a shame what's going on. It doesn't have to go on. That's, I think, what's the hardest, seeing people suffer. Preventable and avoidable damage in order to advance nonsense pie-in-the-sky agendas is very sad. Very, very sad. And it's not a place where I ever thought I would live in America. You know, it's so sad. It's kind of like sitting there with an old friend, watching them slowly die from cancer, even though you have a cure in your bag. But you're letting them die in order to take a stand or teach whoever gave them cancer a lesson. It's a disgusting argument. Make people suffer when they don't have to in order to prove a point about gas companies and defend the socialist agenda. Scarier is every once in a while I go out or I turn on MSNBC in the background and it hits me. There are still millions of people who continue to believe and support this nonsense. People who think Putin is 100% responsible for our gas prices. People who think Hunter's laptop is right-wing purchased Russian misinformation. People who think the parents' rights bill in Florida is starting to kill kids. And people who still blame COVID for everything. Sadly, those aren't even the wacky ones. Those are just everyday Democrats. The worst thing about this job, and as I've said, I've never been happier since starting this new venture with you all, but even the best jobs have tough spots. And for me, this one is having to study, learn, and listen and analyze the other side. You know, at first, it was exciting and fun, hearing people and things I had never heard before. I felt like Jane Goodall studying her primates, trying to make two chimps pull apart an Oreo. You know what I'm saying. It was fascinating. Well, it only took about 48 hours for that shit to wear off. It went from fascinating to frightening very fast. At first, you're looking into the zoo from afar, noting, analyzing, building arguments, And then at some point, you look up from your notebook and realize, these are my neighbors. These are my in-laws, my kids' teachers, the guy who cuts my hair, my boss. And it starts to sit in the pit of your stomach until one day, which just happened, you get a message from a gay guy who listened to my podcast about Florida's legislation and thanks you, or he thanked me for giving him all the information and teaching him that principles come before peepees. The last part was a joke, but he really did say it. And in all transparency, it was my friend's son, which is a little scary. I feel like I was the friend's gay son a few years ago. But point being is, when you think it's all over, that the cancer called liberalism has seeped into all of our lives, then you get a message from a young gay kid who thought he knew, but listened and learned and knows the facts and made better decisions. The even better news for you all is that you don't have to study the other side. You can live in conservative heaven. I do that for you, so you don't have to. I'm sure as you've heard throughout the years, the common liberal theme is to remove accountability when things aren't working and take credit when they are. And I can't just say that's just a common liberal theme. That's a common political theme. But you don't have to go very far to hear the liberal narrative. The president is not responsible for the economy. The president has very little control or impact on the economy or the stock market. In theory, that could be true. There are multiple factors that can affect the free market. So we need to determine if something is a natural dip or a man-made avalanche. It's really quite simple. You have to ask yourself three things. Where was the economy when the president came into office? And what were economists predicting? Other than economists, you can also look at the International Monetary Fund. You can look at the Federal Reserve. And you can look at top economists who write for the Harvard Review, etc. The second thing you need to ask yourself is, did the new president apply any new orders or sign any new legislation that has or significantly impacted the economy? And then lastly, has the president made any significant increases in spending? Well, in this case, all signs point to the big guy. He walked into a great economy where nearly every economist and the International Monetary Fund had affirmed continued growth. Even those who now back Biden predicted growth to continue. Within his first month, he rolled out executive orders attacking oil and gas, Wall Street and banks, and proposed a massive spending bill for infrastructure we know was just another way to slide in hundreds on hundreds of socialist agenda items. Our president is hemorrhaging cash and trying to spend his way out of the 35% approval rating he has. I don't think the guy could give every single American $10,000 to get those ratings up. He continued lockdowns and anti-growth measures through his first year, and his American Rescue Plan did absolutely nothing to stimulate our economy. It was a cash printing spending nightmare focused on increasing our welfare state for the poor and totally forgetting about the middle class. Unlike his friend Obama, who did admit recession and economic challenges, which he blamed on Bush, Biden still won't accept that there is even any economic challenges at all. The talking points are hysterical, and I think we should do a little bit of fact-checking on our own. Liberals aren't the only fact checkers. Here is the last gay conservative fact check on Biden's economic claims. Claim number one, we are experiencing the strongest economic recovery in the world.
We're the only developed country in the world. I'll say that again. We're the only developed country in the world whose economy is now bigger than it was before the pandemic.
Well, two big things wrong with this statement. First is that growth and bounce back happened mostly under Trump. If you look at the GDP changes quarter to quarter, 75% of the bounce back happened under Trump, and one could argue that it slowed in comparison to that rate after Biden took over. According to data just right from the IMF, during COVID, the lowest dip in the GDP was a 30% drop through 2019 and a little in 2020. In the second half of 2020, the economy saw a 35% jump, bringing us back to pre-pandemic levels. However, after Biden's policies and executive orders caught up, we have not broken 6% GDP growth in any quarter of 2021 or 22. Also, after Biden signed and submitted his executive orders, the IMF immediately dropped its growth projections from close to 5% to just barely over 4%. So if he is creating the largest growth in the world. How come once he implemented changes, the International Monetary Fund took their projections and dropped them? In other words, when Trump was in office and implementing his economic policies, the IMF had a close to 5% prediction, right? One of the things I just said, what were economists saying when the president came into office? Well, they were saying 5%. Now they're saying barely over 4%. The last fact of that statement is we are not the fastest or the strongest. We're actually number 4. India, China, and the UK beat us, and we're just tied with Canada. Canada, people, with Trudeau. How is our economy growth tied with Canada? It's insane to think about. Claim number 2, our economy has created 5.6 million jobs since Biden came into office.
6 million new jobs, a record number for a new president, been created since January last. Unemployment is down to 4.2%.
Wow. The left clings onto this claim like a little kid clings to his boogie board in a riptide. That's an awesome number. Man, we haven't seen that growth since 1939. Well, does anyone know what happened right before 1939? The Great Depression, the largest number of jobs lost prior than COVID. It's the same here. The pandemic resulted in unemployment reaching pre-1939 levels, resulting in 22 million jobs lost in 2 months during COVID. So we lost 22 million and he's brought back 6 million and he's a hero? The goal should be to surpass what we lost. This is Joe's 7th place trophy, but to tout this and have it all over the website and the press, quote, Biden record job growth beats Great Depression era numbers, is disgusting. In this case, the goal is 22 million. He's contributed 6 million. That's roughly 27%. That's not great. Unemployment numbers are still bad. And it doesn't include those who went on unemployment benefits or dropped out of the workforce or were pushed early to retire. You can claim to add all the jobs in the world, but how does it align with the unemployment numbers? It's not. We're experiencing a major labor shortage because people are not returning to the workforce due to a boost in income with government-funded benefits, early retirements, people moving from employee to contractors, and a lot of younger people staying home and living with their parents. This is a direct result of the Biden-sponsored American Rescue Plan that created dependency on welfare benefits, not growth. Which leads me to the next big Biden BS claim, number 3, wages are rising.
People are making more money. They're finding better jobs. And after decades of being mistreated and paid too little, more and more American workers have real power now to get better wages and to do what's best for themselves and their families.
This one I love because it just reaffirms everything that conservatives have said for a lifetime. Wages are up due to the labor shortage his policies and spending have created. This has forced businesses to compete for talent by increasing wages, benefits, and incentives. Wait a minute, Chad. You mean without a $25 minimum wage, the market naturally pushes itself up? Yes, that's exactly what I mean. The Democrats would like you to think they are responsible for wage increases, but not responsible for the labor shortage. However, the two are mutually exclusive. You screw up the labor market, but it resulted in rising wages, which, by the way, is not better for the economy overall than having a surplus of labor. The claim that wages are up should tell all of us that the conservative approach to wages works. Competition beats regulated wages every time. All you must do is go through McDonald's or Chipotle or Staples and see signs, join us now, starting at $20, $22, $25 an hour. The other point to be made about rising wages is that the rise of wages is way behind the rise of our cost of living. At the end of 2021, average wages in the U.S. rose 4.9%. However, the cost of living grew 6.2%. And today, that gap is even further. Through this year, the inflation rate has increased rapidly per quarter and wages still hover around the same number. The massive wage hike, especially in service industries like food, also forces companies to raise prices, which is just another form of inflation, and it comes full circle. So rising wages doesn't necessarily mean people making more money, because by raising the wages, you have to raise the cost of whatever you're selling, which adds to inflation. Another good one is his claim, BS number four. This isn't just an American problem. Gas prices and inflation in Europe have reached record numbers, as well as Asia.
You know, today, though, I want to address another challenge that families are facing, and the one I think they're most focused on right now, high gas prices. This is a problem, not just here in the United States, but around the world. The price of gasoline has reached record levels recently in Europe and in Asia. In France, at the end of last month, it reached about $7 per gallon. In Japan, it's about $5.50 per gallon, the highest it's been in years.
Beyond the fact that this is completely untrue, what sort of argument is this? It's like the kid that comes home with a C in math and his parents are upset and he says, well, Johnny and Megan both got C's too. That doesn't justify your lack of studying, preparedness, and hard work. It's the worst excuse in the book. Right up there with, oh, that's not my pot. I'm just holding it for a friend. Now, although several countries have seen a rise in gas prices, several countries have seen drops. Russia, United Arab Emirates, Nigeria, and Saudi Arabia, to name a few. Furthermore, the prices him and his team compare have some major differences. It's a known fact that you cannot compare European fuel prices with the United States directly, price to price per gallon, because their taxes on gas are significantly higher. Take France, for example. In one of his speeches, Biden says, hey, France is at $7 a gallon and we're only at $3.40. Wow, they're double to us. Wow, God, thank God we don't live in France or have those French gas prices, right? Biden's a hero. Actually, nothing could be further from the truth. Here are the actual numbers. As of today, the average cost per gallon in the United States is $4.22, including the United States federal tax on gas, which is 18 cents. Now, a lot of states also have a gas tax, which averages in the U.S. around 30 cents, meaning the true cost of fuel is right under $4, or more exactly, $3.70. Again, that average cost per gallon of $4.22 includes 48 cents of taxes. These are averages. So now he claims the cost per gallon in dollars in France is $7. Well, according to CNN Money, France is at $5.54 and has never hit $7 in the last year. And the absolute highest gas price in Europe is the Netherlands, Holland, in Amsterdam, at $6.48. Well, Chad, my God, that's still high. Hang on. Well, that's not all. We also must factor in taxes within the gallon price in Europe. The average tax on fuel per gallon in Europe is around $2.50. So truly, the cost of gas minus taxes, which do not reflect the true cost in France, is $3.04. In Amsterdam, it's $3.98. Now here, in states like Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas, the prices range from $3.74 to $3.91 with taxes. Without taxes, we're talking about $3.44 to $3.61. That's the cheapest in our country, according to AAA. Not only are we more expensive in a true per gallon cost than France, our cheapest gas is only 30 cents off from the highest in Europe, which is Holland. In California, on the corner right by my house, I can peek out my window and look at it. It's $5.98 for regular unleaded. The total in California per gallon taxes out the door is 60 cents. That puts us at a whopping $5.30 without taxes. Even if it's true what they say, that California is $5 on average, we're still way higher than any country in Europe. So our gas prices are actually higher than pretty much every country in the world because he's limited our supply, he's limited domestic production, and he's also not cooperating with OPEC and some of the other fossil fuel producing countries to get over the hump. BS claim number five, he also loves to tout his 33% decline in shipping containers sitting on the docks blocking movement.
Progress we've made at our nation's ports, which are now moving historic amounts of goods.
You know, after working with our administration, the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach have nearly cut in half the number of those great big containers you see sitting on a dock for more than 8 days.
Well, again, sounds great. However, that is nowhere near pre-pandemic levels. They sit there because there are not enough truck drivers due to the labor shortage he's created. The Port Authority of Los Angeles reported the 33 reduction in containers on the docks without specifying if they are empty or not. In the same report, they go on to say there's an 18% increase in empty containers waiting for pickup on the dock. Also, a big portion of why the reduction of containers has dropped is because they implemented very, very large fines on businesses who do not pick up their containers within a certain time frame. Another attempt to tax our way out of a problem. The fine is essentially just a tax on businesses in different terms, which is awful for those companies because the labor shortage has caused this, not a lack of urgency to remove the containers. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. The real number to look at is how many ships are sitting stuck waiting for entry into the port. Again, Port Authority reports that number is still at a record high. Last month, the average was 84 holding ships. Ridiculous. I take my dogs to the dog beach in Huntington and I turn around and you can see how many ships are just lined up waiting to get in. And you know that increases the cost of the shipping companies because you've got to pay the crew and the captains and the fuel for sitting there. The whole thing just causes havoc. Those are really the most popular Democrat, quote unquote, facts about our booming economy under Biden. The other thing that he loves to tout is his reduction of our deficit.
Let me remind you again, I reduced the federal deficit. All the talk about the deficit from my Republican friends, I love it. I've reduced it $350 billion in my first year in office. And we're on track to reduce it by the end of September by another $1.5 trillion. The largest drop ever.
Doesn't matter. That has nothing to do with anything, really. You can reduce the deficit all day long, but if your spending increases and you're reducing, it just pretty much balances out. Just because you pay a dollar extra on the minimum payment of your credit card doesn't mean you're making any progress.
CNN reporter and fact checker in chief Daniel Dale has the facts here. What's really going on with the budget?
So here are the facts. There is no doubt that the deficit has fallen under President Biden so far. It was about $3.1 trillion under President Trump in fiscal 2020. It was about $360 billion lower than that, so about $2.8 trillion in fiscal 2021, mostly under President Biden. But even with that $360 billion decline, Brianna, experts I spoke to still scoffed at the idea that President Biden is personally responsible for having reduced the deficit. In fact, one advocate of deficit reduction, Mark Goldwine of the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, told me that this claim is almost bizarro world, a reversal of reality. Why? Well, because the deficit was expected to fall by more than $360 billion at the time President Biden took office. In fact, at the time, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office had projected that the deficit would fall by more than $870 billion in 2021 if President Biden did not implement new policy.
So again, you're hearing about these facts about our booming economy under Biden. And are any of you surprised these are all lies? Probably not. But when liberals around you start touting the economy and claim talks about recession or Republican fear-mongering, you should be able to now shut them down. Because very few Americans have seen or been shown these truths, the exact factual responses to the claims they make. The next two factors we must consider are inflation and interest rates. We know interest rates are set and controlled by the Federal Reserve. Inflation is a consequence of a declining currency value, which is determined by the amount of money in circulation combined with raising prices. Essentially, the purchasing power of the dollar declines while prices raise. You all remember the pre-Hitler, post-World War I Germany, where there's pictures of people with wheelbarrows filled with coins just to go buy a loaf of bread. That's the direction we're heading. you get less for your money and prices go up. The primary factor for this inflation is gas prices. I mean, really, it is. No, it's you can't blame one of Biden's whipping boys, COVID, conservatives, or Putin. It's mainly due to the rising cost of food and gas, which coincidentally was not happening until Biden got into office and shut down our drilling and energy industry, thus negatively impacting supply along with a huge increase of demand based on the fact that people are commuting again and going back into the office. Why in the hell would you short supply at the same time as rising demand? Well, you know my theory. This is a calculated effort to force people into electric bullshit cars combined with appeasing his eco warrior Democrats in Congress, because without the squad, he can't get anything passed.
America is building convenient, reliable, equitable national public charging networks. So wherever you live, charging an electric vehicle will be quick and easy. And the foundation will help build help American automakers set the pace for electric vehicles, which means even more good-paying jobs producing batteries, materials, and parts. That's also going to help save hundreds of billions of gallons of gasoline over time.
Biden plans to use $7.5 billion of infrastructure money to build a 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations across the country.
I mean, we saw it with that ridiculous infrastructure bill. They held up the bill demanding more socialism in it. We also could have ramped production domestically or pushed OPEC to increase production by guaranteeing to purchase any surplus from that increase. The next biggest thing is food prices. You know, we all know that he destroyed the gas prices, but what about food? I mean, and I will be fair and honest, as always, we cannot blame all the food cost rise on Biden. We knew, and it was always a given, that COVID would increase costs due to its impact on the supply chain. However, even in knowing that, what did the Biden administration implement to ease these burdens? Nothing. So although we can't blame Biden specifically on the food prices going up, you're just as responsible if you know something and you don't react enough to fix it. That's part of being a president, seeing things come and implementing actions and plans to ease the burdens that might affect American people. He's done nothing. He literally sat with his thumb up his butt and made zero, and I mean it, zero steps to fixing or combating the supply chain issues. Instead, just blame COVID. What can I do? It's COVID. What can I do? You will hear the left blame the increase on things like poor weather that limited produce supply. Sure, but we've dealt with that before and we were able to import the difference. Well, we were able to import the difference because there was room at the docks. Furthermore, even if that was a valid excuse, which it's not, that's just produce. What about meat, chicken, eggs, milk, and more? Again, they blame COVID, but it's them who created the procedures and measures that caused this. It's not COVID, it's the response to COVID. And I blame Fauci and his overblown BS. They essentially forced meat packing and the production of meat and dairy to slow down and follow these fake measures for COVID, which we know now did nothing, literally forcing the production of these items to be cut in nearly half when consumption was rising. The way the Federal Reserve generally conquers inflation is by raising interest rates. So why have they been so slow to raise interest rates and power through the inflation? There are a couple of reasons, but the main one is politics. Sadly, the Federal Reserve has political alliances that influence their decisions. So instead of bipartisan, purely capitalistic, and market management, our Federal Reserve makes choices and tries to help various administrations, and in this case, Biden. Sadly, the Federal Reserve is now centered around fiscal policy versus economic strategy. Alan Greenspan, who ran the Fed for 5 4-year presidential terms from 1987 to 2006, really started the trend of inserting himself politically and publicly showing support for different presidential economic policies. It set a very dangerous precedent. Greenspan, all in all, would be considered a fiscal conservative, but in times he did back big government policies. Our current Fed leadership is composed of Jerome Powell, the chairman, and Lael Brainard as vice chair. Here's where we must separate political party from policy. On paper, Powell should be a fiscal conservative. He served under George W. Bush, right? Well, we know W. was far from a fiscal conservative. He set records on spending and these weird tax cuts that he sent to Americans, but then followed by hikes in various business sectors. He was not a fiscal conservative. He was a big government president. Powell is also a big government guy who's since snuggled up to the liberal Democrats and disparaged Trump, who's the one who appointed him. Brainard, the vice chair, is a notorious liberal. She worked under Clinton and, quite frankly, has never been bipartisan. She has a very public history of cheering on Democrat fiscal policy and big government. Their most recent tactics have been derived by a desire to put Biden's success above the American needs.
I asked Ben Bernanke whether he thinks with transparency and the forward guidance that effectively comes with that, if it locks in the Fed.
The question is, why did they delay that? Why did they delay their response? I think in retrospect, yes, it was a mistake. And I think they agree it was a mistake. There were a number of reasons for it. One of the reasons was that they wanted not to shock the market.
Knowing that raising interest rates would slow the economy, they pushed it out as far as they could. Once they started raising rates, they took a long-term approach, small, subtle increases over time, really having no immediate impacts on inflation, only over years to tackle, claiming that inflation was merely temporary. This is the typical liberal power grab. They would rather see Americans suffer so they don't lose the midterms or Biden's reelection, who's the man who will ultimately decide whether the chairman keeps his job. The Federal Reserve should have no politics, none. The president should have no authority over the Fed. We're one of the only countries in the world that the president is involved choosing and influencing the central bank or reserve. It should be handled completely out of the political arena. Most economists argued that it would be better to do a big bump on interest rates, causing an immediate slowdown, but tackling inflation right away. This would create a short-term, difficult, slow economy for us, but get us out of the mess and eventually get us back on track. Just a few days ago, they came out to announce a large interest hike to combat inflation. Oh, wow. No one ever thought of that. Unfortunately, they're a day late and a dollar short. They spent a year spouting that inflation was temporary, again, to prop up the big guy. So, of course, the rate and time they must hike rates to combat inflation is greater than it would have been had measures been taken 2 years ago. Many economists are saying that we've hit the point of no return with inflation, and we are heading towards stagflation. The increase, no matter how large, will have very little impact on inflation, and even if it does, it will slow economic growth to a screeching halt.
The Federal Reserve is pushing the economy towards a recession, or at least an unwelcome slowdown. Unfortunately, the Fed believes that you attack inflation by deliberately reducing economic activity.
Mortgage rates are already shooting up. The stock market is plummeting, and the labor market is about to take an even bigger hit, believe it or not. Again, they waited until we're in one of the worst labor shortages in history, and this is only going to make it worse. Forcing companies to pay higher wages and raise prices to keep up with their high labor costs, which is inflation caused by the labor market, unlike the supply chain-based inflation we're seeing as well. Nonetheless, it's all inflation. According to The Economist, in an article titled "Why the Fed Has Made a Historic Mistake on Inflation," Uncle Sam has been on a unique path because of Mr. Biden's excessive $1.9 trillion fiscal stimulus, which passed in March of 2021. It added an extra oomph to an economy that was already recovering fast after multiple rounds of spending and brought the total pandemic stimulus to 25% of GDP. As the White House hit the accelerator, the Fed should have applied the brakes. It did not. So, like I mentioned, the situation the Fed has created is one unlikely to land softly. Furthermore, they didn't even stop buying bonds back until March of this year after inflation passed 7.5%. Another reason the Fed did not offensively respond is because they set a very clear balance sheet strategy, and by pivoting, they would undermine their credibility. You know, because that works every time. I mean, it works for Tom Brady, right? The play is to run the football, but it falls apart. So he just waits to get sacked in order to save his credibility of the play. You don't ever shift plays and throw the football or even attempt a Hail Mary, right? That's why Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. Sticking to his original play every time to maintain his credibility. What a joke. Their ego over American livelihood. Who are these people? They do not represent us or America. These are Biden's cronies, and they're making decisions that are hurting us and not helping us.
Maybe, miraculously, the Fed will realize the folly of what it is doing and instead opt for what it has occasionally done before. That is focusing on stabilizing the value of the dollar. Back in the 1980s, for example, and for much of the 1990s, our central bank did that by keeping the greenback roughly tied to gold. But today, don't count on that. I'm Steve Forbes. Thanks.
Essentially, there are several tactics to combat these economic issues that include stimulating or slowing the labor market to impact shortages or overages, responding to inflation, the cost of goods, purchasing and selling bonds, and interest rates. However, our current Federal Reserve failed on all of those fronts. The last major economy failure is our crippled supply chain. Again, is Biden 100% to blame for supply chain issues? No, not 100%. But he's to blame 100% for not acting. The shelves in stores have never been emptier, and crucial items, not just cars and furniture, but items we require to function as a society. I'm sure you've all seen this despicable baby formula shortage. Well, I think they want them all aborted anyways, so it's not quite their top priority. Nonetheless, people are all over running from store to store for basic nutrition for our babies. However, $40 billion right over to Ukraine. When are these people going to wake up? In the same fashion of the woke justice reform where criminals come before victims, America is coming last. So if we break down the supply chain, first, we must mention, Biden doesn't think you're smart enough to understand the supply chain.
What, like, for example, if we were all going out and having lunch together and I said, let's ask whoever's in the next table, no matter how, what restaurant we're in, have them explain the supply chain to us. Think they'd understand what we're talking about?
Historically, we have rarely, if ever, seen supply chain issues listed in earnings reports. It hasn't been a factor, really, until the pandemic. So it's COVID's fault, naturally, right? Wrong. The response to COVID is at fault. Dragging out quarantines, forcing businesses to close, keeping the economy shut down, extending unemployment benefits, especially around Omicron, which was the biggest sham on the planet. This isn't my opinion. These are facts. And we can see it by comparing what I call free states versus fear states. Companies in red states that were opened early had significant bounce backs and less interruptions. Hyundai in Alabama, for example, is way ahead of the curve on production than Ford, GM, and Chrysler because they reopened sooner. And their workers got in quicker. And guess what? Their COVID rates for call out were a fraction of the others. As a nation, we are incredible predictors of economic trends. Most of the time, we can get down to the percentage point. There is no excuse for not reacting here. Supply chain warnings started in the second half of 2019 and fell on deaf ears. I come from the business of beauty, which I've overseen everything from manufacturing to marketing. You can always see a bottleneck coming from a mile away. You don't just wake up one day and you're out of bottles or raw material. Supply chain issues stem from raw material shortages, factory closures during COVID, not enough truck drivers on the road, which is a huge one, port congestion, and ill-prepared infrastructure, you know, his infrastructure bill. In past times, supply chain issues would impact maybe one or two industries. For example, in beauty, we use a lot of lavender imported from Ecuador. And one year, they had massive flooding, destroying the crop. So we all attempted to go to other sources and created a massive bottleneck. The crisis today has no box. It's not just lavender from Ecuador. it spreads as far and deep as it can. The reason for this is because the combination of causes that Biden's caused is deadly. It's not just one raw material. It's every inch of the chain. So even if we hired thousands of truckers and got goods moving on the road again, the ports would still be a mess. Warehouses would be understaffed and so on. The only possible solution would have been to incentivize truckers with huge tax breaks and not screwing up the gas market. So the independent truck owners, the guys that own their own trucks, can't profit. They need gas to be at a certain price because what they charge is determined on what they spend, just like a traditional business. We also could have sent in federal labor to assist at the ports. And we should have also been working with shipping companies to redirect boats to other ports like Florida, San Francisco, and Seattle. And we should be prioritizing must-have goods versus nice-to-have goods coming through the port. Furthermore, the left has been spewing for years that trucker jobs will soon be obsolete and autonomous driving will take over in their desperate attempt to justify this batshit crazy idea of universal income. I mean, I really do wonder how much impact that had on today's trucker shortage. I mean, common sense tells me if every time I turned around on the news and heard I'd be out of a job and replaced by robots, I would be jumping to plan B for another job. Again, folks, the mob never considers the results of their actions. They walk out on jobs that leads to layoffs. They demand we do not use plastic bags in the grocery store. Then they make a more bio bag that is thicker but more harmful to animals. They force everyone to wear worthless disposable masks, which are now covering our beaches and impacting our wildlife. It's a joke. As far as the supply chain is concerned, this will be a continuing problem until actual and true measures are put into place. The left will tell you it's due to people buying more things versus services during COVID. Instead of eating out, they buy more food. Instead of going on vacation, they decorate their homes. All true. But what kind of idiot doesn't see that coming? Honestly, if I said to you, Joe, here is $10,000, but there's a catch. You must stay home to spend it. All of you, me, my fourth grader nephew, could draw the conclusion that they'd spend on goods from home. Biden has done nothing to stimulate domestic production to combat the shortages out of China. Biden has done nothing to improve the logistical nightmare caused by his useless draconian measures. Biden has done nothing to repair the crumbling infrastructure that has been exposed regardless of his multi-billion dollar infrastructure bill. And the last point that we need to make that I don't hear a lot is most of these supply chain issues fall under the umbrella of transportation. Where's Pete Buttigieg and his wife Chastity? I would bet my life they're not having any issues getting formula for their ugly baby. He is the biggest waste of space in this country. And I'm hard on him because he only has what he has because he's gay. And that's not fair because there are millions of people out there that are probably more qualified and would love to take the transportation and supply chain of this country to new heights. But instead, he's too busy talking about gay rights and...
First of all, every American ought to be able to get paid parental leave. That's something the president believes and has proposed. It's something I believe. It ought to be basic. This is important for women who find their ability to get ahead in their careers influenced by these judgments that are being made about whether you can be a parent and an effective employee at the time, but also men. If there's this idea that, you know, maybe men have access to paternity leave, but it's frowned on if they actually use it, then that doesn't work for a marriage life.
Being a pundit on what's going on in the rest of the country and using his gayness instead of his brain to fix what's going on. He's just the biggest waste of space in this country. I can't stand him. A small town mayor, now a major secretary in the president cabinet. What? How does that even make sense? I mean, he has literally done nothing, said nothing, and had zero sense of urgency around the real issues. So, hey, Pete, what's the solution to fix the supply chain? This is the only answer I've ever heard from him.
And as long as the pandemic continues, we're going to see all kinds of disruptions, right? If COVID shuts down a port in China or a shoe factory in Vietnam in September, you're going to notice that at the mall in December, which is why the biggest thing we have to do still as a country is put the pandemic behind us.
Instead, he gets on CBS and has these interviews, and it's all pie in the sky bullshit about the environment and how we're going to green all the transportation and all the buses and trains are going to be electric and this, that, and the other. See, when you're an elitist prick, this stuff that we're talking about, not being able to get your groceries, paying 50% more for gas, not being able to use or find formula for your children, it doesn't affect them. So why should they care? They're not having issues with formula. They don't have to pay for gas because they're supported by the federal government. This is the message that he's sent from day one. I mean, if he can't make the current systems we have work, do you think that he or our government could manage something massive like turning over our entire country to green transportation? I always just want to say, Pete, it's not what have you done for me? It's what have you done for me lately? All the grandiose plans don't help Americans now. What are you going to do? This entire administration is a day late and a dollar short on every issue that's come up. There is no sense of urgency, and they disgustingly use humor around the issues. So we must ask ourselves now, what's going to happen and what do we do about it? Most analysts at most major firms are predicting recession. According to Bank of America, they state an inflation shock will cause a recession in 2022, as well as an equity bear market. Inflation causes recessions, Bank of America said last month, and right now inflation is out of control. According to the note, nearly all prior recessions have been preceded by inflation surges. The researchers also laid out examples from the 1960s, early 1970s, and in 2008. They also note last dominoes to drop in terms of recession expectations is higher yields and a weaker dollar, which is happening right now. They also predict that a rates shock, when the value of our currency spikes in relation to another in a short period of time, will follow the ongoing inflation shock, which will ultimately lead to a recession. This particular analyst also added he believes this recession will cause the S&P 500 to fall below the key 4,000 level by the end of 2022. Seconding that, Deutsche Bank is also in agreement, except for their time frame is a little bit longer. They believe a recession is likely except by the end of 2023. And Deutsche Bank's researchers predict that the trigger will be the Fed hiking interest rates above 5%. The bank's economic researchers said in a recent note, in order to stamp down on inflation, the central bank will have to raise the federal funds target rate much higher than 3% currently expected by many analysts. Quote, we will get a major recession, but our strongly held view is that the sooner and the more aggressively the Fed acts, the less longer-term damage to the economy there will be, they said. Something that I've been saying all along. What are they waiting for? Act now, jump it up now, let the economy slow down, let us have a rough bump, and then we can get back on track. Get the inflation under control. They won't do it. They continued, the Deutsche Bank analysts continued to argue that inflation is going to continue to surge past expectations due to the hot labor market and supply chain issues, pushing the Federal Reserve to act. That's what we want. We want them to act. They close out by saying, we assume conservatively that a Fed funds rate moving well into the 5% and to 6% range will be sufficient to do the job this time. Again, a massive hike to get it done. So all signs point to recession. The most frustrating part of that for me is that all of this could have been solved because the writing has been on the wall all along. But instead, we have leadership in Washington, Republicans and Democrats, that would rather bury their heads in the sand than take some accountability and start making actual policy and implementing actual change that will affect the American people and not just get them a spot on Fox News or CNN to talk about their politics. When your reelection comes before making sure an American mother can buy formula, or an American dad can put gas in the car to go from store to store to store to store to find formula for his child, where restaurants can't get the raw materials that they need to serve people now that demand has soared back since all of these restrictions. We knew what was going to happen. We had a pandemic, a virus came through. We shut everything down. We knew it was eventually going to open back up. I mean, did they just think we were going to be down forever and all they could do is help prop up the service industry with things like shuttered venue loans, et cetera? Or did they know that eventually it was going to open back up, therefore increasing demand? Because as not only as Americans, just as a human nature, if you haven't eaten out in 2 years, you want to go have a meal and probably more than you would have to kind of make up for lost time. I guess my point here is that a lack of action is just as bad as bad action. You can lay out the worst policies in the world. You can lay out higher gas prices, cutting food, screwing the labor market. You can do all those things. Those are all actions. But beyond that, to not react, to stay paralyzed and take the reward over the risk because you're worried about losing midterms and you're worried about getting reelected, that is disgusting. And that is the left mob to a T. What's happening now? How can I win now? What can I do? And I don't care who else it hurts. We have to take care of this. We have to fix it. And we have to let our elected officials know that they need to do something now. The fact that Biden is just now going to meet with manufacturers of formula and importers of formula. But we've been having this problem for over a month and he's said nothing and done nothing. He's more worried about this Roe v. Wade bullshit than he is about getting American babies fed. And this is not a small issue. This is a health issue because not all moms can breastfeed. Most people supplement formula and the nutritional value is there and helps lead to healthy, thriving children. But he doesn't care. Suck it up. It's Trump's fault. It's Putin's fault. You can tell me the Putin price hike all you want. You can tell me Putin is responsible for my gas prices. You can tell me that COVID is responsible for the supply chain issues. But what have you done about it? You don't get to say the what and the who without talking about the why. And guess what the why is? A lack of action. So what do we do now? What is the next step, knowing that a recession is on the horizon and we can faithfully plan for our future in a safe way? Well, I have to be really careful here because I'm not a financial advisor and I have no affiliation. But in the broader terms, as things are going down, it is a good time to buy if possible. In the most general of terms, which I'm sure you all have heard, buy low, sell high. I believe that we're going to go lower, but now is the time to start thinking about what you can buy and hold. So not as a financial advisor, not as anyone with any expertise, just my own personal experience combined with a lot of research. There are three areas that we should equally play in when we're investing pre-recession or during a recession. The first one is the obvious one, the stock market. The second one is precious metals. And the third one is cryptocurrency. All right, so let's talk about the stock market a bit. I'm not a huge fan of the stock market. A lot of times it feels a little bit like Las Vegas for me. But as most people ask me, as a Christian conservative, how do you approach investing and economics? And my theories are pretty simple, which I don't invest in any company that doesn't align with the values that I align with, which is totally up to you to set those values. I'm not going to tell you what companies do and what companies don't. For example, I would never, ever, ever put money in Disney. Not now, not before, not when they bought ESPN, none of that. It's not something that aligns with my values. However, I know about five guys that I've known forever who during the 2008 recession bought things like Apple and Disney and big stocks that you would think that someone in a low, middle, upper middle income would be able to really purchase and run with. But they took advantage of the dump, the price being at rock bottom. And what happened was, well, you all know the story. They're incredibly wealthy now. They've been able to retire. They have a good chunk of change in the bank. They're not heavily investing. They know that it was kind of a one-time deal, but they took advantage of the recession and they made a lot of money. I would recommend that you do the same. The one that I'm really watching is Apple. And yes, I understand the argument could be made that Apple is not in line with my conservative Christian values. However, they are very pro-privacy and they have fought the United States government time and time again from being able to break into their technology and basically spy on us. I agree with that value. I also believe that they make a fantastic product, and I know for sure that that will continue to happen. That being said, you can see that I have a slightly different way of analyzing and managing my finances and investments, because everything's centered around my values and who I am and the Christian conservative backbone I believe exists in this country and also within me. When you're talking about the future and future-proofing yourself, it's very, very, very important that we don't lose who we are in a desire to get rich quick, like investing in companies that are against everything you stand for, like Facebook or Netflix. Let's talk a little bit about precious metals. Now, when we talk about precious metals, for the most part, we're talking about gold. Gold is a really cool, different investment because there's several ways that you can invest. You can invest in gold futures. You can invest in the mining companies that mine gold. That's what Warren Buffett talks about all the time. And you can also invest in gold, just like the price of a stock up and down. I am a huge fan of gold. It's safe, it's not going anywhere, and it has years and years of proven history of nice, even returns. Also, gold, since the 1980s, has risen significantly in price per ounce after interest rates have been raised. We know there's going to be additional interest rates that are coming. So the word on the street is, hey, get in now, even though it's been a tumultuous process of the price going up and down. Regardless of that, if history tells us anything, there's going to be a big spike in the gold price following 6 to 12 months after the major interest rate hike. Gold is also the go-to protection against stagflation, which many economists are saying has to happen. Prices will continue to raise. Inflation, we've already said the Fed was a day late and a dollar short, so inflation will not necessarily be completely taken care of while they raise interest rates, which will slow the economy down. So you've got a slowing economy and rising prices, which is stagflation, which is the direction that we're going. And again, historically, gold is a great way to diversify when stagflation is coming. People ask me to explain what I'm going to do as a Christian conservative to future prep myself from this horrible Biden recession that's about to come. I'm going to be putting a lot of money into gold. I also believe that the gold standard is constitutional, and the use of gold and investing in gold, it's very much an American capitalist market. And in my opinion, one of the safest and most effective commodities you can invest in today or any time there's the slightest rumble in the economy. So again, the way I personally am recession-proofing myself is buying stocks low from companies that align with Christian conservative values, investing in gold with the confidence and belief that the price will go up eventually, and like I mentioned, cryptocurrency. Now, I'm not going to get into the details of crypto because, quite frankly, I am not experienced enough to educate you on what crypto is and how it works or anything like that. What I will tell you is the reason why I believe so heavily in Bitcoin is because Bitcoin is an example of how a free market currency should work. There's limited supply, so there's only X number of Bitcoins in circulation. And although that changes slightly, it's not like the Fed that just print cash for fun. So it's a totally free market. It's not backed by any government, international monetary fund, any big central bank, and it's 100% anonymous. People will argue with you or me about those things, but that's how I've come to understand it, and that's why I invest heavily in Bitcoin. Allow me to leave you with this. Recessions are not about the wealthy. If you can afford to buy or invest in something and sit on it, ultimately, you'll be okay. Recessions hurt those in the middle, those who are on fixed incomes, those who are dependent on their retirement plans that are being managed by some of these big banks, like CalPERS, for example. Those are the people that get hurt the most. So when I'm giving my thoughts around investing or the economy, please always keep in mind the ones who will be feeling it the hardest. And it goes both ways, because that is why I believe in investing and putting your money, if you have extra money, into ventures or investments or funds or whatever it is that support our conservative values. Because those conservative values are going to be the things that help the middle class the most, the things that are going to boost them up, the things that are going to keep their retirement funds flowing, the things that are going to increase those fixed incomes. That's why it doesn't make sense to put your money into a company that's pushing for essentially socialist democracy, because that's how you destroy the middle class. You can see it all over the world, countries like France, Italy, the UK. The middle class is fading, and the middle class is fading because we are continuing to push and push and push the boundaries of a free market with regulation that's turning around and hurting everyone, but it's hurting the middle most. Remember, the power of your wallet is the most powerful tool you have. One thing Trump said in an interview recently was, when you're down, when you're upset, when they cancel you, when they threaten you, just remember, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And I truly believe that. Knowing that means that our movement can affect the entire economy. Our movement can impact whether or not a corrupt socialist pushing company like Facebook stays in business. We can make a change applying our values across the board. You can't be a conservative, a capitalist, a proponent of the free market, a Christian, yet put your money where those things don't exist. Everything in your life as a conservative, as a Christian, as a capitalist, as a proponent of democracy and a free market should mirror those beliefs. Because we are the silent majority, we can impact the direction of the economy and of these companies, these woke companies or socialist companies. You're already seeing it with Disney, simply by applying our same values, our same ethics, and our same beliefs in how we spend our money. If we don't support them, they won't continue. And maybe it's not the Facebooks of the world that just are too big to fail, quote unquote, but it can happen with food companies. It can happen with grocery stores. It can happen with record labels. It can happen anywhere, anytime, with anything. Put your money where your heart is, because you can do the same thing and make a positive impact on the country and the future of the country as we push forward with our movement. Again, remember, there's more of us than there are of them, and we have to use our buying power, our investing power, our banking power to send the message to the market that capitalism is supported, free market will always win, and conservative values will always prevail. You just listened to the Last Gay Conservative podcast. I'm your host, Chad Law, reminding you what Reagan said. Government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. God bless you, President Reagan, and God save America.